We have a question from Kate. It's a little bit long, so I'm going to read it and then take it away. My daughter has processing focus and memory challenges, as well as cyclical vomiting syndrome. And I don't know what that is, but that does not sound good. I feel they are all connected. So interesting how you mentioned gut health related to challenges. She isn't on any daily medication for her challenges. What is the name of the supplement you recommend for processing challenges? Thank you. Or recommendations that you would make in that instance.
Right. Okay. So number one, definitely I would look at gut health. You're 100% right, mom, to think that gut health is playing a role, that the cyclical vomiting is connected to the processing and the other cognitive issues and so forth. I see that a lot. And in fact, even there's children with autism who, you know, notoriously have poor gut health, I think it's like 40 or 50% have colitis and Crohn's, you know, and their children. So we know that there's a huge connection there with digestion and the brain. In terms of processing and supplements, I don't, again, recommend that just in terms of, you know, not knowing enough about the background. Obviously, things like zinc, which we talked about, is super important for processing and memory. But if she has cyclical vomiting and is having that kind of gut issues, the reason why we really need to tackle gut issues is because a lot of the time these supplements are not absorbed that well if the gut is that compromised. So I tell parents, you don't want to spend all this money. You know, I know parents who have spent hundreds of dollars a month on supplements, and it's really having no effect. And it's not because the supplements are not necessarily good. It's just that the gut and the body is not able to properly absorb it. So the first place I would start on whenever there's processing issues, as well as the cyclical vomiting, is working on gut health. And I would start, if possible, I don't know what kind of eater she is, but if possible, start her off with, you know, cooked veggies and foods. First of all, I would stay away from raw. And I would start increasing bone broth to the point where she hopefully would be eating bone broth every day, whether it's in a soup, stew, or just drinking, you know, like half a cup even to start. I'd be curious to know how she would do certain probiotics. Certain strains are better for certain kids and others aren't. So I would definitely look at those factors, because I feel like that's typically, if the gut issues are that serious, that's really where you want to start first. Mm-hmm.
That's great. Great suggestion. It reminds me, we had a student years ago, but I always think of him because we were dealing with the learning aspect. We'd worked with his older brother, family history of dyslexia, remediated the brother's dyslexia, and then family came to us and said, we think he was only in pre-K at the time. He was just getting into school. And they're like, we don't really know if it's a learning challenge. And honestly, that's the least of our problems. Our concern is the behavior, and can it, you know, all be related? So he had just started pre-K and was having all these meltdowns at school and at home. And the family had kind of like rearranged their entire lifestyle to accommodate his behavior. You know, they couldn't like change any plans last minute. They had to prep him and front load him and everything. And he definitely had learning challenges. We started working with him and he definitely had, you know, learning skills that we needed to work on. But we did make a recommendation to, you know, have his diet looked at and do the nutritional route. And it was crazy. Within 4 weeks, they found a series of food sensitivities, but they eliminated dairy and gluten to start. And he was a completely different child. And he was different in school and he was different with us and he could learn and he could access all the materials. And it just... That was the other part. Like we're talking a lot about learning, but behavior and just kind of the way that a child is operating in their world, if their gut or if their body is not, you know, serving them. That was just a story that stands out to me. And then we were able to do our work and, you know, he's thriving now in school. So it's definitely a component that parents sometimes forget about, nutrition related to learning or behavior, but it's so important. It can change the game. So,
right. Yeah. And it's interesting because I just, I know Jill asked earlier, what do you do if you have a kid who, you know, hardly eats anything and is a picky eater? What's really interesting is I have parents sometimes say to me, I really want to do your program, but I don't know because my kid is such a fussy eater. And sometimes they're in their teens and it gets a little bit harder now to start saying, this is what you're going to eat. And I just had a client last week tell me, I believe their daughter was, it's around 9. And when I first started working with them, we had to have a chat and I had to try to kind of help her, you know, sell it to her, the importance of these diet changes. And she really was not keen. And we did think it would be good to remove dairy and gluten as a trial. And she was like, why is this lady that I don't even know trying to ruin my life? And she made such an improvement. She went from having D's to having A's and B's and made such an improvement that her New Year's resolution this year was to continue to not eat dairy and gluten because she was feeling so much better. And I'd like to share that because that happens often enough with me where kids who were like, I don't want to do this, feel so much better. And, you know, they're not getting in trouble in class. So they're able to focus and read. And they're like, no way, I'm not messing with this. So if we can just get them on board for a stretch and they can see those results, it's incredible how much even, you know, an 8-year-old or a 15-year-old mm-hmm. will get on board.
Mm-hmm. We have seen that too. And yeah. I think, you know, it's so important to involve our kids in the process, whether it's learning therapy or nutritional, whatever it is, you know, we want to educate them, help them understand what we're doing as opposed to we're doing something to them.
Right.
It's something we're going to do together. And, yeah. you know, it is helpful to have an outside person other than the parent to help them get on board. So, but yeah, we've seen the same thing. I remember a boy who was about 9 who they really reduced sugar. That was the thing. And they had guidance for it and everything. And so he knew exactly how much sugar he was allowed to have each day. And after a couple of weeks, he went to a birthday party and they had these beautiful cupcakes. And his mom said, it would be okay if you had that today. And he said, no, I don't want that. I won't feel good.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's so great.
Yeah.
So we have some other parents checking in and some sharing kind of their experiences. Christine, hi from Denver. After urine and blood work, we found out that my daughter is low in zinc and fish oil and foods with folate are not good for her. Biochemistry testing is super important. She has dyslexia and auditory processing disorder, APD. So yeah, definitely a missing component for some families. Let's see. Jesse. Hi, Jesse from Illinois. My daughter seems to have problems focusing and following through on one task, although I feel she should be able to do more than one task. She is 7 years old and her teacher says she has no problems with this at school. She seems to be really hyper and I was wondering if you had any suggestions on how to bring her focus in a bit. We do let them have sugar and processed flour, but I do try to feed her balanced meals and do not let her eat or drink junk. She does sometimes drink and it got cut off. Let me see if I can get it. MIO-like drinks or MIO-like drinks. I don't know what those are. Do you have any suggestions?
So the first thing I would suggest is if they are still eating sugar, even if they are eating balanced meals, and I see that a lot, we just don't recognize or realize the impact that sugar can have on a focus and attention and all of that type of stuff. I would love to see like a trial of eliminating sugar. And see how that shifts things. Cause I have kids, that's maybe the first place we start. And once they get through that initial, you know, getting over the sugar cravings and so forth after a couple of weeks, I have kids where the teachers are calling the parents saying, oh my goodness, he must have changed his medication. He's so much more focused. I even have, I think it was 4 to 6 weeks into a program, a girl, she was about 10 or 11 years old, was really struggling with reading comprehension. Dad did not buy into my program. Mom was all over it and dad was kind of like, whatever, we're doing this, I guess. And it was really funny because I got an email from him saying, oh my goodness, this stuff really does work. I thought you were a quack, but we got a note or something or a call from the teacher saying that her reading comprehension has improved so much. And all we've done so far is eliminate sugar. So I would start with that. I would look into deficiencies. And I would also look into, you know, is there other food sensitivities that could be playing a role as well? And if they are eating sugar, they most likely are consuming other preservatives as well, whether it's food coloring and all that type of stuff. So that can definitely, you know, affect focus.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that came to mind, and this isn't specifically related to biochemistry, but just with mom saying that the teacher says there's not a problem at school, and then the child is pretty out of control at home. To me, that triggers me to think, wow, this child may actually be struggling at school with something, reading or some kind of learning issue, but she is maintaining. She's putting all of her energy and her attention into being good and doing well. And then she gets home to that safe space and she just can't do it anymore. And she kind of falls apart. We do see that as well. And so keep an eye out, you know, to see, are there some struggles with learning going on? There may or may not be, but sometimes that's what you see, that the teacher thinks they're doing fine, but the child has used up everything they've got to do fine at school, and then they're done when they get home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we have Amy asking, how do you handle those with allergies and bone broth histamine issues? How do you heal the gut health for them?
So, yeah, Amy, that's a tricky one. I totally get it because my daughter was the same way. So if she has histamine issues, the first thing I would do is put her on a low histamine diet. And a low histamine diet is not permanent. It's usually we only need to do it for about 6 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks. And that can really help to just shift the histamine response in the body. And then I would start trialing again the broths, but I wouldn't start with a bone broth, which is typically cooked for, you know, proper bone broth is cooked for around 12 to 24 hours. I would just start off with meat stocks. So maybe you take like a roasted chicken, you put it in a Dutch oven and you cook it for just 2 hours. You have the water, maybe onions or whatever at the bottom, and you just use that. And then you help or you do that for a few weeks at least. And then you slowly start cooking it longer and longer, depending on her tolerance level. If there is histamine issues, I also would look into, is there an overgrowth of certain bacteria or candida that could be causing the problem, as well as looking at mold toxicity. It's a huge factor. Finally getting a lot more awareness. That was a huge factor with my daughter. We had no idea there was mold in our 30-year-old home, and it was full of it. So I would look into those factors to find out first why there could be a histamine issue, because if, for example, there's mold, it could be mold in the school, could be at home, whatever. The low histamine diet will not obviously address that if we need to clear up mold spores.
Lots of questions and stories in the chat. The first one, please address poor nutrition and dysgraphia. What is the biochemical connection and where to begin with diet changes or supplements for a very picky eater who has dysgraphia, 10 years old?
Okay, so dysgraphia I find is very similar to dyslexia. There's not like a different protocol for dysgraphia than dyslexia. Again, we're looking at the child, but definitely I want to look at factors, nutrients that affect motor coordination, as well as vision and so forth. So things like making sure your child's getting enough, you know, essential fatty acids in their diet, that they're getting enough magnesium. That's like, I think the mineral that we are most deficient in. 80% of us are deficient in it, and probably with the stress of COVID even more so. So you really want to make sure your child's getting enough magnesium. And obviously zinc is really important as well. But in terms of dysgraphia, what I tend to do is we look at the nutrition piece and we look at the gut health. Gut health actually is really interesting in terms of the role it plays with dyslexia and dysgraphia. And I often have parents want to do the program, but they're like, well, we don't really think nutrition is the problem. We're going to, you know, we'll focus more on the brain training aspect. And usually I have to kind of coax them a bit to stick with the nutrition part. And it's always really interesting because once we start going through addressing the food sensitivities and the gut healing and all of that, before we've even gotten into the actual brain training portion of the program, they're like, oh my goodness, I can't believe the results, how much his coordination has improved since we've, you know, changed the diet, or how much the handwriting or fine motor or whatever you want to say has improved. So those are places that I would start in terms of diet, supplementation, and so forth.
Okay. And then just a follow-up question, are there liquid zinc supplements our son cannot yet swallow, pills or capsules?
Yeah, there are usually most supplements, if you're getting it from a good provider, can, you know, has pretty much most supplements available in liquid form in some form or another. So definitely.
And I just want to jump in here and reiterate, I really, really encourage you, if you are going to try to attack these issues, to get some professional help with that. There are just so many pieces to this puzzle. And if you haven't really studied it, you probably don't have all those pieces.
Yeah. Thanks, Jill, because that's one of people say is, you know, what supplements are good for dysgraphia. There's no tip, like it just depends on the child. And that's where we look at what are the factors going on? What are the symptoms, you know, all of that type of stuff, because, there's so many that I have kids, I would say, you know, right now my program, about half of them have dysgraphia, and we have, you know, different ways of approaching that for each child. So,
Makes sense. Okay. Amber is asking, is there anything you recommend to flush the system to build up better nutritional decisions, like to slowly monitor and catch what may be part of the issue? So I think that's like referring to what we call like a detox or flush the system, anything.
Okay. Right. Okay. So I'm going to say, be really careful with detox, especially with your self detox, because the big thing is you need to make sure that the detoxification pathways are open. First of all, there's a lot of people who are doing, protocols where they're killing off candida or whatever, and, their liver maybe isn't, you know, 100%, or their kid. And a lot of these kids do have, genetic variants that affect their detoxification pathways. My daughter did. And so you really want to make sure that those detoxification pathways are well supported and focus on strengthening those pathways before you start doing any kind of flushes. Because if you do that, and they are, I think the best description I ever heard is, if you think of a sink, and if you start trying to run that sink, say there's brown water coming out of the sink, and the sink is clogged, you're just going to fill the sink up. It's and so that means that mess is now recirculating into your child's brain. And the body is really intelligent, right? So what it does with toxins is, as much as it can, it will put those toxins in areas of the body that would be least harmful for those toxins to be, like the fat cells. And so even whenever someone's doing like rapid weight loss, it makes me nervous. And I always warn them to make sure the liver and all of these systems are working, because you're also going to be releasing a lot of toxins. I'd be careful of the term flush. Makes me nervous, to be honest. It seems a bit aggressive. I would really just support the detoxification process and realize that anybody who's trying to tell you that you can flush years of toxins out of your body in a couple of weeks, even 6 weeks, it's not happening. It's possibly risky, and it just doesn't work that way. And so the way I like to do it in my program is, we are just slowly improving the diet and allowing the body to detox as it should, with healthy foods and so forth. And I do detoxes, if you will, you know, spring and fall, but I'm doing it very gently, and I, you know, I'm doing it continuously, and I'm just doing it with some very gentle supports and so forth. And that's what I have my clients do. I would definitely, you know, use caution, and I would definitely seek a practitioner who's trained in that. Avoid do it yourself at home.
Definitely. Stacy is asking, when asking the doctor to test for a deficiency? What's the best way to get all these elements tested, I think is what it's supposed to be. So, you know, if a parent is just going to their regular general practitioner, or should they seek a specialist? What's the best way to cover all the bases?
Right. Okay. So a few things that to be aware of with deficiencies. The first place I start with addressing deficiencies is looking at symptomology, meaning looking at the person. I'm not against testing, but testing also has its limitations. For example, if you go to your doctor and just get a standard magnesium test, your test results will probably come back fine because you need to have magnesium for your heart to pump. Otherwise, the heart is not pumping. But that doesn't mean there's enough magnesium for other non-vital functions, such as brain function and so forth. You can get red blood cell tests through a functional medicine doctor for magnesium. I do like the organic acids test. It's really good for, you know, it's telling you a lot about different deficiencies. But I would encourage you to first focus on symptomology, work with someone who's trained in that, and focus on just increasing nourishing foods in the diet. Because I find what can happen is people get really hung up on testing and, okay, I'm deficient in this. So, or, you know, he's deficient in these things. So we need to take all of these supplements. And the problem is that it's not always as simple as taking the supplements. If there are gut issues, if there is issues at the cellular level with absorption, you can take all the supplements in the world and it doesn't mean it's going to have any effect. And that's where you're going to think things are not working.
Right. Absolutely. Karen has a quick success story. When my son was weaned between a year and 2 years, he developed severe constipation. Colonoscopy revealed no known cause, just an immature system. By 5 years old, when asked if he wanted to eat, he simply said, "I'm not hungry. I'm never hungry." He wasn't growing either. We found a video of a doctor, Aliceo Fasano, who described the many effects of gluten, including suppression of growth hormone. After 1 month of gluten-free, he couldn't stop eating and grew at almost 14 and got cut off. He's taller than his projected maximum height, and he's still gluten-free.